Jesus, the evil in the world, the evil in the world, but not here. All you got here is beef, wine, and shenanigans here, folks. Stephen Van Patten, as always, joined by Mark Abbott and the illustrious Kirk Johnson. Fellas, I would ask you how great of a week you must have had, but I've also been speaking to you for the past 3 hours now, so we'll skip that. Coming up at some point, we are going to talk about Harder They Fall and whether or not it falls. But before we get into that, a very, very important installment of Horrible People We Need to Talk About Now That Trump Is Gone. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a terrible trifecta for you tonight.
Yes.
First of all, let's talk about Paul Gosar. At least I think that's how you say this.
Asshat.
Ridiculous. Yes, that's a good one. So Arizona congressman, in case you haven't heard, who actually created a sort of sadistic parody animation thing where he's attacking AOC and President Biden with swords and shit.
Yeah.
And it's not even the first time he's done something like this. He actually, a few years ago, he released a picture of President Obama having a meeting with Iranian President Hassan Rouhani that didn't actually happen at all. Horrible human being getting away with ridiculous, harmful things. So he's our first subject. Kirk, you were telling me the reason he's in the office in the first place is probably more due to gerrymandering than just the people of Arizona being jerks.
Yeah. It's a crazy thing. And when you got, your opponent running against you, pull out an ad where six of your siblings come out to talk against you, and one of them going on CNN to literally call you a sociopath, your sister, three brothers, three sisters, and none of them like you.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And you got to kind of wonder, like, well, shit, I know you didn't vote for him. Who the fuck did?
That's got to be an awkward Thanksgiving.
Yeah. You imagine they had a Thanksgiving. He's a sociopath. You probably still somewhere in his lab he's probably appropriating another Japanese anime that we all know and love to put his face on there and attack AOC like you do an Attack on Titan.
And I think I've said this before. As a horror writer, I wish I could scare people the way AOC scares racist white guys.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's like just a tidal wave of fear.
Yeah. And anyway, it's not just the white guys. Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Oh.
Boebert. Yeah. They all looking like, it's kind of like, and excuse me for using this analogy. It's kind of like when Tupac was on death row. And a friend of mine made this comment like way back when. He says, you know, Tupac is actually a big deal because he's the only one holding on death row against everybody from like the East Side, from Puffy's camp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all these dudes in Puffy's camp, and he's one person holding down. That's what like AOC is. She's like the only one. She's like holding down. And I'm not taking anything away from quote unquote the squad, the other progressives in the Democratic camp, but. You know, they're all literally like going after her, like with a vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's crazy how, like, I feel like AOC, when she retires, needs to like commission a drop squad and have these motherfuckers in a van with no windows, with tinted windows and shit, just driving up to all these people and just yanking them in a van. Or do a Jay and Silent Bob at the end of the movie, just knocking on the door. Hey, Marjorie Taylor Greene, did you say this and this and this about AOC? Well, yes, I did. Come here! Just beat the daylights out of them. You know what I mean?
Speaking of her, even though she wasn't in my trifecta of evil, I do hope that brother, the very astute looking black cowboy dude that's running against her,
right? Yeah,
at the moment, I hope he manages to clean her clock. Like, I almost sent him money,
right?
And I have no money to send any cowboys, black or otherwise.
Well, Mark, now we got to hope all that gerrymandering don't touch that area either. Now,
well, then there's that, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mark, it's kind of hard to imagine, but I guess it is, you know, it's like a guy that actually is going to get away with that, because I know Speaker Pelosi is trying to put sanctions or something in place, mm-hmm. but I don't know what you've heard.
You know, goes out of Gaussarian, as I like to call him now at this point. Just a matron of evil all the way around. I mean, it worked. Their little thing worked against Marjorie Taylor Greene. They got her kicked off everything. So mm-hmm. all she does is like wanders the halls, you know,
like haunting, a ghost,
like a ghost, really, you know, that, you know, just you serve.
The ghost, no, she's the ghost of Christmas useless.
You got Ghost of the Gaussarian, and you got her library ghost that just walks around like, shh, and people come up on her. You know, what's crazy about this is, who is the comedian that held the bloody head of Trump's head up as a
oh joke? No, that was Kathy Griffin.
Kathy yes. Griffin.
And
man, did they go after her?
Well, I happened to have a conversation with her about that, because she was on the President's Show. I was stage managing, and she had been out of work for months.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Months yeah,
over that point,
yeah, out but of work for months.
Apparently, you know, this guy, he can pull this off. There's no Secret Service investor. I mean, let's put it this way: we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the Secret Service is like, okay, you know, that's strike two against you, because you know already start something one other time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether or not, you know, it's kind of at this point, you never know who is doing what behind the scenes while we're all seeing everything in front of us unfolding.
Right.
You know, by the time we come back from Thanksgiving, he'll probably be hanging out with Marjorie Taylor Greene doing nothing either, because they done kicked him off of everything. And then just, you know, serves no purpose other than just to just be a fly in the ointment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, you know, kudos to her, because, you know, you think about it, in other countries, they're actually getting the fist fights on the floor in certain parliaments and stuff like that. You say something about somebody, mama or something like that, they're ready to like throw down. They throw shoes at people in other countries for doing ignorant stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only imagine there's some that she must have had to call and curb some of her family members from coming down there and putting foot in the ass. Because yeah. I mean that in a way where it's like, yo, do you need us to come down there and do something about this clown?
Exactly.
And right. It's like, no, don't get yourself caught up in this, because I mean, this is what is the dude? Called her out of her Christian name on the one time, and she had to
call her effing bitch, right?
And had to address him in Congress, like, be like, "Yo, what in the hell is wrong with you people?"
Yeah,
because
cousin Tito got out of jail, and you know, he don't play.
It's just.
Well, I don't know about cousin Tito, but her father is probably ready to like
mm-hmm.
get in.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
He's probably ready to get in and just be like, all right, you know what? I tell you what. I'll meet your racist gringo ass out here in the street.
It just amazes me how, and you know, once we get into the other asshats that you got on that list tonight, how is just this consistent letting this crap slide?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like there's no and the reason, you know, and I've come to the understanding after everything that has happened with the pandemic and everything else, this boils straight down to there are no ramifications or repercussions for these people. So this is why they continuously do it. It's like mm-hmm. the kid that never learns his lesson,
yeah.
You know, because, you know, as much as he cuts up in school, his parents don't do anything to him.
Yeah.
But eventually, you run into the one person. It's going to be that one person you weren't counting on. Mm-hmm. The wrong one. On the wrong. You're going to say the wrong thing on the right day to that person who decides, you know what? I done had enough of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care, but take the pin off, take the jacket off. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you're going to be like yelling for the sergeant at arms because they're going to put hands on you. Yeah. You know, and it's just.
Well, I mean, I feel like it's like, first of all, you put out a Photoshop before the AOC thing. You put out a Photoshop picture of President Obama with President Rouhani. And, mm-hmm. and so here's the thing. Here's a little historical perspective. One of the things that, no pun intended, sank Marcus Garvey's Black Star Line was the fact that when he put together some paperwork to try to get, I think he was just trying to get, you know, investors.
Mm-hmm.
And he put out a picture of one of the boats that he owns, but he had named it Phyllis Wheatley. He had gone into the print and changed it. So they called him out for all kinds of fraud. And on the basis of that, because J. Edgar Hoover, of course, was working on him already anyway. So right. The second they found that, he's in trial. He's going to jail. He's got all this. And then when he gets out of jail, shipped back to Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
So to your point about repercussions and any sort of like accountability, it's just unbelievable. It's just really unbelievable. But you know, hopefully with any luck, a witch will grab him and fly off with him on a broomstick, or he'll fall down a well or something. But moving on. Now we've got, might as well just bring this on over here. Kevin Guh. I don't know. But ooh. All right. So he is the defense attorney for the people that killed Ahmaud Arbery.
And yeah,
this piece of shit actually had the temerity to go out in public and say that he doesn't want there shouldn't be any more black pastors sitting with the aggrieved family.
Mm-hmm. He said the too many black pastors. He's like, hey.
It's like, so, I don't know if Sharpton was here.
Right. Yeah. Know.
Jackson's home with COVID.
Oh my Jesse God.
Jackson was in the fucking courthouse, you fucking dick. Like, mm-hmm. What are we talking about here?
Yeah.
Like, the fact that he actually said that, it's unbelievable. And it's like, and those of you that follow me on social media know I went on a little bit of a rant because I compared the situation to Medgar Evers' widow,
yeah,
having to sit and testify about watching her husband be, you know, bleeding to death in their driveway after getting shot in the back by a Klansman, who was, of course, mentioned in our little game last week, name that racist. And while she's testifying, people are, you know, other racist politicians or walking in, shaking hands with the defendant. Mm-hmm. While she's on the stand talking about her husband being murdered. Yeah. So fuck you, Kevin Guh. I think I'm comfortable enough to get into that space, you know, and the horse you rode in on, you racist piece of shit. I don't, Mark, you want to add something to that?
You know, no, I laughed despite everything. It's not laughter out of humor. You know, it's the thing is what's crazy about this is that 40, 50 years ago, this wouldn't have been televised. Probably would have never heard about any of this. And, you know, it's again, another one of those examples of somebody so fixed in their comfort zone of not feeling that anything is going to be said or nobody's going to have the audacity to say anything to them that they, you know, they just come out the side of their neck. I think you should be more concerned about the fact that your defendants are no longer sitting in the 1950s. And it's a very strong possibility they will be seeing the inside of a jail cell. Some dude named Malik might be their roommate, depending on where they're sent up. I mean, I think worrying about who's sitting in the gallery shouldn't be your concern. And if you're that concerned about it, then that does tell me that it does send a sign that there's something you're scared of. You're definitely scared of something, because if you're not concentrating on these guys and you're worried about who's sitting over with the family and this, that, the other thing, it's either you realize you don't have a pot to piss in and you just got to find something to point a finger at, or, you know, you're just comfortable in your own skin that you just want to throw bullshit at the board, I guess.
I'll say this. I think part of the issue or what, you know, this man may consciously or subconsciously be trying to avoid is the humanizing of the victim's family. You know, the whole thing of, you know, like one of the reasons over the years that it has been okay to kill us is because our humanity isn't being recognized.
Yeah.
And then if you put us in, and it's the same thing, you know, I want to say it's the same reason that, you know, people are trying to, you know, avoid having critical race theory, which is really, you know,
not a thing.
It's like a fucking college course. Right. Really need to have a talk.
Selective college course.
That's naming shit, because we just call it what it is. Horrible things that Black people went through in order to get to this point. That is what you would actually be teaching these children, who should know so they can actually be better human beings. And that's, you know, that whole thing is I think that's what we're trying to avoid when we have Black. And here's the other thing. I'm not, as you both know, I am not Mr. Churchy Church guy. Okay. Right. But here's the other side of that. If something, God forbid, would have happened to any one of us, it would be a Black pastor, more than likely, to seek justice for us. You know, it's not, you know, it's not going to be our families, because our families don't really have that kind of clout. It's definitely not going to be somebody from work. It's going to be some Black pastor that's going to take this on.
Yeah, I was actually real quick to, you know, to your point, because, you know, we do live in this country and in the world, and possibilities, things happen. Although, how come not all the media, but how come the media never shows that one Black family that's looking to get justice for their sibling, their child, or their daughter, or their son? And it's a white pastor that's actually there comforting them. You know what, Pop? And the thing is, you imagine that it has happened. Not to the degree that Black pastors would be there, but it has happened, because it's community shit, right? But they never show that. It's kind of like you saying, Steve, you know, you can only go so far in showing the humanity of Black folks. Mm-hmm. So, and and I'm sadly enough, the Black pastor in a lot of people's minds who hold power has been seen as either buffoon or charlatan or something of that nature.
Sure.
Right? That's why, you know, they'll always talk about, that's why they tore down Jeffries, Reverend mm-hmm. Jeffries, when Obama was running president.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
They always talk about, you know, Sharpton. The Sharpton still has a black mark on him from the Tawana Brawley case.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And also some mob ties from
earlier. Some mob ties, yeah. Yeah. But you know there's a white pastor someplace that's not, you know, that they don't show. Because imagine if it was a black family grieving and searching for justice in the courtroom, and right next to them, holding their hands, praying with them, is a white pastor of their church.
That would be some hella optics.
I'm just saying, yeah. And for a lot of the listeners, people who know me also, it's kind of like, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, white folks, you know, taking over our the struggle or anything. No, I'm not talking about that. Like you're saying, it's the optics.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to show that shit,
mm-hmm.
how humanizing to white folks would that be? You know what I mean?
Well, you know,
because it no longer becomes, oh, those black folks over there crying, and their son probably a criminal anyway. It becomes now, wow, they got the white pastors, you know, back in there, you know, supporting them emotionally.
Well, it's another white person. You know, it's interesting. You bring that up.
Yeah.
Remember the abolitionists?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now we kind of candy coat those in history class.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we don't talk about, you know, that many of those, the northern churches were
you
know, were white, and mm-hmm. they were hiding black folks to get them north, to get them out of the situation they were in. Right.
They don't want to talk about how, and like you're saying, in Oklahoma, out in the West, in Midwest, it was mostly white folks shooting and fighting mm-hmm. on behalf of abolitionists.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of touches back on what Stephen said about the critical race theory.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it boils down to everything is fine when history has painted everything a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start to peel back the layers of everything that has happened, the cause and effect of things.
Yeah.
Slowly but surely, people start to realize it's not a one-sided story, because yeah. you know, even in fiction, you have it's always the hero and the villain, and the villain is always, you know, boom. But there's always these complexities. There were these things that happened. The villain was once a good guy who suddenly, you know, things went the wrong way, and this, that, the other thing. You know, he got put on a bad path because he was trusting someone and all these other things. And it just amazes me that how people want to fight against that type of knowledge, knowing that, you know, all of these things didn't, you know, I go even go back to the history of Columbus. You know, the bottom line was that they were sending him. They paid for him to take these ships because they thought he was going to fall off the end of the world. So what they do, his entire crew was criminals. They figured we killed two birds with one stone, load the entire boat up with all of these thieves, rapists, murderers, marauders, and they'll just disappear. They got here and they lost their minds, you know, and then people are like, well, you know, but we want to sugarcoat that because it doesn't play well to the overall story.
Doesn't make money.
And even if, you know, it's always like, you know, comedians used to say, you know, the news crew would show up and they go find the worst looking black person to interview for a situation to happen. Yeah, I saw the whole thing. That dude, you know, he got the curl. He said, who, I forget, was it Chris Rock? They said they walked right past the brother in the suit and tie. And the Yale and Harvard education, they go straight for the dude with the curlers in his hair. Because that's the picture. That's the picture that's just, that fits the narrative.
Yeah. And I mean, and of course, that gets back to, you know, the fact that, you know, we don't really control, like, we participate, you know, Jay-Z will go out and fill up Madison Square Garden, you know, and then he'll produce a movie and we'll actually get to that. And you know, you have a few of us that are able to make certain moves and, you know, and provide some sort of level of entertainment and everything else like that. But on the bigger, grander scheme, we are not in control of our image. And especially when it comes to like local news, where, you know, some dummy in Arkansas will have Morgan Freeman confused with Sam Jackson, or you know, just like stuff like that. It's like we're not being allowed in certain spaces. We're not allowed to participate in certain things. And then on top of that, you know, it's like we have to worry about all these injustices and getting shot at and you know, just like your taillights out, it being a death sentence, you know. So this is the world we're in, but we're not allowed to tell anybody.
Right.
And that's, you know. Yeah. That's fucked up.
That's what I gotta think. I'll say it. As much as a lot of shit is in it, you know, I'm glad for social media. I'm glad for internet and social media. I'll be for real, like real talk. A lot of stuff that's coming out now, we would never have known about it.
Including Ahmaud Arbery.
Including Ahmaud Rittenhouse. Arbery. Yeah.
Yeah, let's motherfuckers, get on
wait,
to that.
Wait, real quick. Those motherfuckers gerrymandered the jury.
Well, let's talk about the judge. The judge is fucking gerrymandered. Bruce.
I was talking about Arbery.
Oh, yeah.
No, but Rittenhouse.
The Rittenhouse thing.
Rittenhouse.
Is also a mess. Judge Bruce Schroeder, and it bothers me that he's named after one of my favorite Peanuts characters. had the nerve, again, the temerity, again, the caucasity, which I borrow that from Amanda Seales, to suggest that while the case is being tried, the people who were shot and murdered not be referred to as victims. Are you fucking kidding me? In a fair and just world, that man would have been pulled off that case right
already
then and there.
Yeah.
But and I did some minor reading before we sat down and started this, and I'm hearing that the prosecution is completely shitting the bed. There's a lot of other stuff going on with the case that's really not going well at all, including one of the other including, I guess, the paramedic that Rittenhouse shot basically just came out and said, yeah, well, it might be self-defense because I was actually coming to possibly shoot. He said something, I can't remember it verbatim, but it was something that really kind of froze the case. makes it a self-defense plea a little more plausible, which... considering that you have a judge that's all about ready to, that may be on the verge of adopting the fucking kid,
putting it in a mistrial,
it makes it all that much, you know what, and that's the thing, if you can't call a mistrial while this man has apparently his ringtone is
the Trump
entrance music for his fucking rallies. Like seriously, like what the fuck? It's just upsetting. He shot two people. He needs to go to jail.
Yeah. And his mom.
It's really that simple. And that's the other thing. Yeah. And that's the other thing. Black moms can't finagle addresses so their kids can go to better schools without serving jail time.
Jail time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actual go to jail. Do not collect $20.
Right.
Actual fucking jail time. This woman, and not even in the same fucking state.
Yeah.
Don't even live in the same state. Oh, there's some black people acting up. They're with BLM and AR-15.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about you guys, but when I was that age, my mother was giving me books and clothes, you know, some money for comic books, shit like that. I didn't have an AR-15. But then again, my mother wasn't a white supremacist crazy person.
Right. I already think basically what's going to happen is the only thing they're going to get him on. There's only one thing they could get him on. And that's the fact that he owned a gun. He has
cross state lines. Gun.
It might be the cross state lines, and it might also be that he is not old enough to own that type of weapon.
Mm-hmm.
All the more reason the mother.
Reason
that the mother.
So it will be a bunch of misdemeanor charges that are not going to hold up. He is going to walk off these murder charges. And here's the thing. Even if the jury was to come back and guilty right across the board, even if after that horrible daytime Emmy Award winning performance that he put up on the stand, which they really poked holes at, and the prosecutor got chewed out by the judge,
judge
twice. The other day, my favorite was the fact that the judge asked him, he goes, "Why? What is wrong with your face?" And he's like, "What?" And he was like, "Why are you looking like you?" And he was like, "Nothing." And the judge was like, "Say what you got to say." He said, "I just find it interesting that yesterday you chewed me out for trying to introduce something into the case you said I couldn't. And the defense is doing this today and you haven't said a word to them."
Right.
And then he went on. Oh, then he did get hot with him then. Because he's like, "Hey, I'm just saying, you know, I'm reminded of the guy who raped that girl. It's about 4 years ago.
Brock Peterson?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh.
Who was found guilty. And the judge said, "I don't think it's right for this young man to lose his life by going to jail," and this, and overturned it and let him go. I could see the jury coming back with a full guilty verdict and this fool going, "Yeah, I don't believe in any of that. So forget what the jury said," because, you know, in that Trump state of mind, we don't have a say, even though, you know, we're dragged into jury duty and it is our civic duty to do this part of justice.
Sure.
In their world, it's as long as it's what we want to hear, it's justice. But if you're not going to give us what we want to hear, we're just going to overturn whatever you say anyway.
Right. Yeah.
And we'll let the boy walk. What I'm curious about, none of these individuals were black.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious to see how these folk, what these folks are going to do if he's let go. Because one thing is for sure, white folks don't let it go. They will chase you to the end of the earth. Do they trip you? I mean, and you know why I say that? I think about OJ. Because they got him getting mad trying to steal back his own stuff. He's been out of jail. Nobody's been trying to lock him up since. All they wanted was for him to serve some jail time, whether it was for killing that woman or whether it was from crossing the street the wrong way. You're going to jail at some point. So I'm very curious to see how the families of these three individuals, one who was wounded and two who were killed, what they're going to do at this point, because it's clear. It is absolutely clear that this guy is not biased. There was a part of me the other day when I was walking home wondering if the reason why this, the prosecutors haven't tried to call a mistrial is it's just kind of the
I'm confused the myself.
This is just the writer romantic in me. I'm wondering if the prosecutors are like, you know what? This asshat has been doing this for years and nobody's ever seen it. We're gonna use this opportunity to show the world what this fool is like. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean that's a stone throw away. I mean, I don't think they're thinking that, but I'm pretty sure there have been hundreds of cases that this guy has tried where guys have walked. They have clearly murdered somebody or done the crime, and he sat up there with his religious fanaticism and was like, you're quoting Matthew. I'm like, there's a separation of church and state, bro. As a judge, you are not allowed.
That you're supposed to be enforcing.
Yeah. You shouldn't even be up there quoting anything from the King James Version or whatever version of the Bible you're up there doing. And at this point, I don't know if this becomes a situation where after this, the prosecution goes before the Supreme Court and goes, you know what? We would like all of the cases this man has ever tried to be investigated.
Mm. Right.
DOJ. And all of a sudden, or even the families. Yeah. And you open up a can of worms where the next thing this guy finds out, oh, not only have you been removed from the bench, but you've been disbarred. And all of your cases have been overturned and everybody's been let out and they're on their way. And the people who you locked up, who should be locked up, are now being rounded up for a second trial. Mm-hmm. And they're going to find themselves behind bars after living a wonderful life in freedom. I mean, who knows? But I can't believe the process. I'm like everybody else. I'm like, I don't know when y'all going to call a mistrial on this. Well, they can't now because they're in closing arguments. So it's
it's nice to think that maybe there's some kind of way where this all like goes, you know, right instead of left. What you kind of described was, I mean, it definitely was a nice vision, but it also has like hints of a John Grisham novel in the sense of, you know, the old justice and fair play coming in at the end there. I love it. Don't get me wrong.
That's why said it was it's the writer romantic in me.
But it's like, unfortunately, Danny Glover's not the judge. This asshole is. And we're just, I don't know, man. It's just lack of liberty and injustice for all. It's just bad. Things are just bad. But the good news is this concludes this installment of Horrible People We Need to Talk About Now That Trump Is Gone. All right, let's talk about something happy. Good God. The harder they fall.
The harder they fall.
That's your version of talking about something happy.
Well.
That was a good movie. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's a
shit. It was good. Well, we can get into it. Taken as simply a piece of entertainment. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is. Super fun, super entertaining. Now, the internet and its wokeness is a little, I guess, parts of the internet anyway, a little perturbed because, I guess, because of casting. I guess because the story has absolutely nothing to do with what actually happened in these people's lives.
Right.
Yeah,
that's the one thing.
Some people tend to get a little frosty when hip hop is used in a Western. I used to be one of those people. This movie may have actually, you know why? Because first of all, Barrington Levy is on the damn soundtrack. So
yes, he is. Whoa,
that was pretty good. You are training, but yeah. So it was enjoyable. And you know, but that being said, Mark, I'll toss this to you. The woke crowd that's concerned about the lack of historical accuracy, mm-hmm. even though it says pretty much right up front, we just use it in names. Like, you know, like you could have named him Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, but we're using, you know, Nat Love, Cherokee Bill, and whatever, and then you're gonna like it, there's also talk about how the writers aren't even black and you know, all this other stuff. So anyway, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I like the movie for what it was. Right. I had my little issues with some of the portrayal because I know I've read about some of these people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, I love Stansfield. I love his performance. I would have preferred that they found somebody that was half black, half Native American to be Cherokee Bill, since everybody and the only reason why I bring that up is because how people get out of their sorts when they talk about the whitewashing of black characters in certain areas. But I mean, it didn't take away from the film. Right. It doesn't, it's not like, why they do that and they made the movie look. I hope that the inclusion of these characters will have people now wanting to research them, find out a little bit more about them. You know, there were several other portrayals. I mean, Stagecoach Mary, who's another one who
Zazie Beetz.
Which I, you know, in I would have loved to see. Let me put it this way: I would have loved to see the version of her that they had on Hell on Wheels.
Wow!
Rather than the one that they created for this
nice
film,
deep cut, bro. Yeah,
because she was a badass. She was not playing.
Yeah.
But in hindsight, I think originally when I first started to watch it, I had a little trouble with the story, in the sense of that not the portrayal of the people, but just as the classic Western stories, these are always a revenge piece. It's mostly revenge, somebody going after somebody for
like
doing
a kung fu movie.
Yeah, and I guess before I got to the big reveal, I was sort of like, okay, y'all are going a completely different way with the whole revenge kick. And then we find out what we find out in the end. And I was like, oh, okay, you brought it back around. And now I'm one of those people that had a problem with the music. Because I honestly felt this was a great opportunity for some brother or sister who does scores, musical scores, like Terrence Blanchard. I wouldn't want him to do it, but somebody to get the opportunity to do it, like a sweeping epic type.
Darius
of
Rucker?
Oh, come on, man.
Country music now. You know that, right?
No, he does. I know, but I'm not.
No, but he's talking about
In
the Ennio Morricone,
like all that,
put it this way, epic feel. Yeah,
let me tell you. So the My Guns Go Bang, the song that opens the film, the music is absolutely a Western. That kind of the violins and all of that other stuff. I wanted to hear a little bit more of that, but again, for what they were doing and for how everything turned out, I thought it was a really great, it was a lot of fun to watch. It's definitely up there with one of my favorites. If Posse was here, it kind of crept up next to Posse and was like, get up, get, sit. All right.
Yeah. I was just about to ask.
I agree with that.
We don't really have a whole lot of movies that fall in this drawer.
Yeah. No, we don't. Not too much, right?
We don't have too many Westerns.
It reminded me of a couple of Westerns from back in the 70s, from the Blaxploitation era. Mm-hmm. It's like Legend of Nigga Charlie with Fred Williamson. Thomasina Bushrod, I think it was called.
Okay.
With Max Julian.
Right.
Yeah.
Buck and the Preacher, yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I felt more of a genetic line between those movies and this one as opposed to Posse.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I think my thing with Posse is that I just think Mario Van Peebles is not a good filmmaker. He's just not. His choices of music. I mean, we can compare between the musical choices, the score between Posse and this one in terms of, you know, the very modern take on music.
Sure.
Yeah.
But but The Harder They Fall knew how to marry the tempo and the beat and the melody, what the rhythm was for the score marries perfectly with the imagery and the pictures that we're seeing and the energy that scene comes out with. Like, they played Fela for the climax.
Mm-hmm.
We have come here, what we came to do. That shit was fucking phenomenal. That shit got me so in my chest, like, I can't even explain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I never even expected to hear Fela coming out like that for a Western. Mm-hmm. And it just added to the action scene and the fight scene between the two ladies.
Now that fight scene.
I'm officially calling her now. She is Queen King. Regina King is phenomenal in this movie. She is, like, I really look forward if they're doing a sequel with her in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still all in. Her eyes, the way she came across Cherokee Bill, Lakeith Stanfield, hands down.
Definitely, the performances overall were fantastic.
Yeah, Koofy, young lady named Koofy. What? When, man, she was, and oh,
she
had me on the floor, and she actually, the funny thing, she wasn't portrayed, they didn't give her a name of somebody historical, but they played her character, they created her character based off of William Caffey, who's actually, her name was actually Kathy Williams, who joined the Union Army to fight for the blue, fight for the Union Army during the Civil War, and she was a black woman, right? That was phenomenal shit. I laughed out loud when they went to rob the bank in the White Town. I can't tell you any more about that. You guys got to watch that yourselves.
Leave that
shit, man. I laughed so hard when they
entered. I just love the fact that what's his name? Oh my goodness, Bass Reeves is riding around with a jail.
Yes,
Delroy.
Yeah, Delroy Lindo.
Because you know, marshals usually rode into town.
Yeah,
collected you, put you on, laid you on the back of a horse somewhere. And dragged you out. This fool's riding around with a portable jail. Just, and the fact that when he shows up, everybody in the place is like, oh damn, who he coming for now? Because it's like, one of us in here is in trouble.
Like, the way, I mean, the guy, and real quick, the guy who played Dion, he's in Black, was it? With Anthony Anders on Channel 7.
Blackish.
Oh, yes. The comedian. Oh, my God.
He always playing the dumb best friend.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal in this.
He was.
He actually, I was like, oh, you need to get some more of these kind of roles, bro.
Mm-hmm.
I got to get up to everybody. Idris Elba was just, he can always play a bad man. He always just, I was just very, 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 happy with this.
I have to admit when the opening of the film came, because I didn't know who they, because I kept hearing about the so when the opening of the film and they start naming who's then, it's like the Rufus Buck gang.
Yes.
As soon as I saw that, I'm like sitting there like, okay, who's playing Cherokee Bill? Because I know Cherokee Bill in here somewhere.
Right.
And I was a little shocked by the, because Cherokee is when you read the history of these guys were
like the real deal.
Yeah, they were
nasty. They're pretty nasty motherfuckers.
Those
guys, they had to be. They, I mean, as we sit here complaining about our plight as black men in 2021 America, those motherfuckers just got out of slavery.
Yeah. Oh, like, no. Yeah, yeah.
A couple days ago.
But somebody, and the thing is, you know, and it, the society created who these people are.
Yeah.
But Nat Love and the Nat Love and the gang he was with when they're 18 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
Man. No, Rufus Buck.
Rufus Buck was
him and his boys.
Yeah.
That shit was really like, yo, but like this, them motherfuckers was Clockwork Orange before Clockwork Orange.
Mm-hmm.
That's how vicious they were back in the, they had 13 day robbing, killing, raping spree.
Mm-hmm.
So they was heavy. But I will say this also. Ali, oh man. Can't remember the brother's name, but he played Bill Pickett,
mm-hmm.
the sniper mm-hmm. in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to see him acting in, you know, I'm glad to see. I always get a kick out of really seeing him in movies and doing his thing, because I actually think he gets a real bad end of the stick in terms of just roles.
Yeah.
Like ever since they did him dirty in X-Men First Class. Yeah. Yeah. He played Darwin.
I forgot about that. After that was him. Holy shit.
Yeah. Fun fact, I never watched another X-Men movie after that.
Oh, shit.
After they did him dirty like that, I was like, you know what? Fuck y'all. Fuck McAvoy. Fuck it. You know, whatever the fuck y'all want to do, y'all X-Men. Fuck y'all all. I ain't fucking with none of y'all. After what you did to Darwin, and Darwin, his power being one of those best powers anybody ever had. And it just kind of kill him off like that. Oh, fuck y'all. So I like seeing him in movies, though.
Yeah. We really should have had a protest over Halle Berry's first wig. I mean, you really want to be in as Storm, I'm saying.
Oh, a Storm. Man. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we tried to make this happy.
Yeah.
A happy conversation. Until we got into Black X-Men dying before the credit roll is over. No, but it was a good point. It was, kind of like a waste. Yeah. You know, I've always said a lot of times in these movies, we bite it because it establishes the badassery of some other character.
Yes.
At the end of the day, there's nothing more terrifying, apparently, gentlemen, than dudes that look like us.
Yeah, you know what they did that too? God damn. Yeah, I can't stand that shit. I remember when they did that in Thor. Like how hardcore Thor was. He had to beat up the big black guy.
Mm-hmm.
and in the TV series Vikings, when they finally make it to Morocco, mm-hmm. they raided Morocco, actually, North Africa. And they have the Bjorn, the main, everybody's, you know,
mm-hmm.
main, I love that big blonde Viking character, kill the big black guy guarding the harem. And I was like, he's the only black guy in Morocco, by the way. He was the only black guy in Morocco during the age of the Vikings. So, you know, whatever the fuck. Again, excuse my cursing, man. I'm just all pissed now. Still love that movie. I'm pissed. These motherfuckers at my job, I bring that shit up and they're like this. That's a movie? It always underlines, underscores how alone I am at my job.
You know, it would be nice.
I hate it.
It would be nice if they turnkey the harder they fall into a Netflix series. I wouldn't mind watching that and seeing something like that transpire. Right. Like could you imagine what it would the Rufus Buck gang crossing paths with the James gang?
You know what? And they had some great comedy and witty moments in that movie.
Thing with the train almost killed me.
Bro, that shit with the Red Hoods. with Jim Beckwith and Pickett when they talking about that shit killed them too.
Did you guys catch who the train was named after?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
C.A. Bozeman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Definitely a tribute.
That was a nice touch.
That was a nice touch. Definitely funny nice enough. Touch. Regina King has actually never worked with
Chadwick.
Yeah, have they in a movie?
I don't.
I'm trying to think in my head.
Nothing's coming up to me off the top of my head.
Like any of the biopics that Chadwick Boseman has ever done?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think she was in
42.
No, she wasn't in 42.
Right, and she wasn't in the James Brown movie.
Thurgood.
He wasn't Thurgood. Wow, they've actually never worked together. That would have been an interesting, acting a couple right there. That would have been shit.
Because he and Viola got together once.
Yeah,
Ma Rainey's.
That was so heavy. Powerful. Yeah. That was powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, man, I'm just.
All right, guys, we got 3 minutes left. Mark, while we have a minute, why don't we talk about what's happening over at the Speculative Fiction Academy?
Yes, the Speculative Fiction Academy just announced today they launched a new class on werewolves. They're going to be launching that this week. So super excited to hear about that. Mm-hmm. Great news that Steven is now joining the illustrious team. He'll be doing bits on movies. Am I correct?
That is correct. It's actually, I just sent the second installment over to our friend L. Marie Wood. It's called
fiction.
Speculative Fiction Academy. Yeah.
Wow.
It's
wow,
called okay. Whining About Movies, and it's literally me, one, and I just, you know, give some opinions and pontifications and a little humor, and basically it's just like, you know, sort of like a little storytelling review.
Oh man, that's awesome as fuck.
And I'm I'm working. I've finished doing the piece on Terror on the Screen, which is about writing horror movies. Not so much transposing literary books into horror films, but just basically breaking it down on exactly how to create a solid horror script, you know, from beginning to end, and how to put your characters together. And it's actually was a lot of fun to put together. So I'm hoping a lot of people get a lot out of it.
Sounds fun. There'll be links on my page, www.laughingblackvampire.com, or you can just look up speculativefictionacademy.com and go check them out. Gentlemen, that's the show, basically.
Yep.
I want to thank you both, as always. I do enjoy these conversations.
Mm-hmm. All right. So do we.
Anyway, next week, more fun, more hijinks, and certainly an opinion or two. Thanks for listening. We will see you soon.